John F. Kennedy Library, President's Office Files, President's Recordings Collection, Meeting Recording Number 21. For additional information, please see Recording Log Number 21.
French-German friendship and sort of an entente as a new type of what he said was the encouraging part about the European thing, and he thought there's also the common market. And he had quite a long talk about the common market. It seemed to have no application of defense. Then he came, the next thing that bothered him very much was of the relief of Neustadt. And he told a long story of the Soviets being the surprise and everything else. And he was very unhappy, first, that he was leaving. He said, Neustadt has got to be an influence that we think is almost necessary, vital. I told him then of my acquaintanceship with Lemnitzer, and I said, I don't see how you can get a better man. Now, he hasn't had quite as much experience in this kind of thing that Neustadt, but he was. I sent Lemnitzer over to Alexander as his operation officer in a big army group, and I said that he does know something about Allied work together. Now, he said then, but he said, by and large, we see this. There's two things. You're putting, you're sending Lemnitzer out, and Neustadt out, because they apparently have not understood the policies, or not followed the policies that America is now adopting. And you're putting in a John Taylor. Then he reached over and got a book, and this book was turned out to be John Taylor's book. And he said, "Now I must tell you, John." He said, "I tell you as your friend, if this book, if the philosophy of this book is going to be adopted in Europe," he said, "I am afraid there will be disastrous consequences in Western Europe." And I said, "Well, now, you better go ahead, Mr. Chancellor." He said, "The philosophy of this book is that we should not depend on atomic bombs." And he said, "We should fight and strive to fight our wars by conventional weapons." He said, "If we do this, if we adopt this kind of philosophy, this means that America is again ready to see Europe overrun. Then we will start starting way back to where we were in 1942 to go back and plan, and after all of this destruction and occupation." And he said, "This time it won't be as easy as it was under Hitler." And this, by and large, he said, he saw this as a very strong evidence of an enormous revolutionary change in American policy, defense policy in Western Europe. And I said, "Well, now, I can't quarrel about that. I mean, I can't argue the case, because I am not privy exactly to the inner circles, of course, of what they're saying. But I do know this. They're spending a good many billions to keep our deterrent in a very tough shape. And the missile work, as far as I can see, is not only going ahead, but from all that my G2 friends will tell me time to time, our strength is going up even more rapidly than what we thought first calculated, and to greater value. Therefore, I can't see that any American government is discounting the effect of the deterrent, or its need to use it in the face of overwhelming strength." Now, shortly after that was the gist of his talk, although he brought in all sorts of details and you might say, auxiliary sort of reasons to supplant it to supporting position. But then I got a word, it came out from one of his friends, one of his people, that reached me a week later, said that General Taylor had given some testimony that greatly reassured him. Now, I didn't read this testimony, I didn't want to read it, but apparently the German said that spoke to me said that apparently General Taylor no longer believed exactly what he said in his book, because he had changed his mind. So the big real thing was when I saw this in the paper, and then this German came to see me and told me this. I said, "Well, I think maybe there's no need for telling you, because it's probably something you're quite well acquainted with and knew about the change."
Well, I think that, of course, I think they misstated Taylor's position. As you know, Taylor has been very strong on tactical atomic
seemed to be the best arrangement, but it was unfortunate that General Gavin left in September, who had been identified as support for the French nuclear effort, and General Norstad left, General Lemonson went in, and these things are regarded, I think, as quite significant, and the Chancellor is 86. But as I say, I think that the criticisms which are traditionally leveled at the United States, when you think that the amount of ground divisions we have there, the amount of effort we're putting in various ways. Here's the French, a division in the heart of West Germany. I talked to Ambassador Alphon this morning. I said, I don't understand this. I said, this French-German rapprochement is wonderful, but here the Germans, who've been quite critical of us this summer, as I say, have cut their defense budget in the last month, although they've got a very strong economy. The French have a division in the heart, even though your minimum goals are 4 on the NATO, you really should have 6. He said, well, we've got them for the defense of France. I said, well, but you can't have a few divisions here and a few others. The British are under the Allies. So I think that the press, particularly, sort of feeds these European criticisms of our efforts. And I think that considering the load we carry compared to the load they carry, it's incredible.
I would agree. And as a matter of fact, I tried my best. Although every time I did, the diplomats always said, well, if you do it, you're going to lose Europe. Now, that's always true, because they're temper and this and that and the other thing, and the psychological reaction. But I tried every possible way. I said, well, now let's make these smaller divisions. Let's begin to show them that we are concerned about this great strength. After all, we built almost unaided that great infrastructure that starts right at the ports and go all the way through. We've got airfields, we've got everything, and of course De Gaulle didn't talk to me substantively at all. He just was very nice and very hospitable and all that, very kind, but we didn't talk about it. And he wouldn't, you know, he's a very, very much a critical man. But on the other hand, the German gave me the understanding that not only were they going to go right up to their target, but I said, of course, your target's too small. Europe people are still now 60 million. You're right, you're on the firing line. Our country, which is, let's say, 3 times the size, is doing much more than 3 times what you're doing. And you people ought to be waking up to this. But I am astonished that they cut their...
Bob McNamara is coming over, he can give you the figures on it.
Well, I think when I write to Adenauer, I'm going to tell him that I'm astonished.
I think we'll get Secretary McNamara to give you the figures, and I think it... your talk is very helpful to him. Of course, he has a great regard for you and John Foster Dulles.
Yeah, we're very friendly.
So that I think the fact that you that helped reassure him very much, especially when you spoke about Lemonser.
Yeah. Oh yes. Well, Lemonser, hell of a man.
That's right.
I said I just can't believe that you'll have anything but satisfaction here. Now, he did bring out he gave me all of the circumstantial evidence to show that Norstad knew nothing about his immediate relief, because Norstad, by happenstance, had been there about 5 days earlier and was talking with him the plans that they were going to do together. And so I said, well, maybe he was on the road.
That's right. He did come. It was only 5 days before his relief, because he came back here about a month in July. He came back in July, and we talked about this. He earlier said he would like to resign between August and September and the next January, gave me a 4 or 5 month period. Well, we picked October 1st November because of the Lemonson Joint Chiefs. So when he came back here in July, we talked about whether we ought to go to January, and he said no, and he said he'd also like it to come out right away, because otherwise it would be rumored that his influence would be non-existent. So that we moved it at Norstad's own suggestion with a good deal of speed. Now, they may have felt that it was indicated that we were quite the reverse. I'd give anything to have Norstad there, because I think we're going to have a terribly difficult time in Berlin. I think Norstad had so much experience, and they have so much confidence in them. It's a very tough job for them to go there.
That's right. And not only that, but first, I'll say this. Norstad is a very tough fellow, I think, he's a very great supporter of his own convictions, and normally, I must say, I mean,
It happened when Mr. Truman called me and asked me to go over there. The great argument he was, unanimously, these 12 countries, 12 countries have asked for you. And I said, well, as long as they've asked me in person, well, Mr. President, nothing new, you just have to send me over. But God, how I hate to be plumbed. I did. So then when I was leaving, man, I was going, I finally agreed to come over here and stand for this Republican nomination. And I said, all right, now we'll do, I must do it unanimously. It must be done correctly. So I gave plenty of warning, and they sat around. Now I wanted, what's his name?
Rutherford.
They decided to take Ridgway, because Ridgway was coming out of Korea, I think, when I said no. I don't think that Ridgway was a temperament for that kind of a job. But anyway, he came back then to chief staff about a year later. But always it was done unanimously, everybody requesting the president to do this. He knew all this past history. And that bothered him, because he said it looked like their opinions weren't very, very important. So, but I told him that just had to be something that was mechanical. No one would do that deliberately. He seemed to take
it. Well, Norstedt wanted us to move because he thought that there'd be rumors about it. As I say, Norstedt told me that he couldn't, that this is what his desire was when he was over in the winter. Then when he came in July and we talked to him about what our timing was, he said he'd like it to come because of it as quickly as possible. So what we did was announce Norstedt and then say that if we were asked to submit somebody, we would submit the name of General Levinson and put it up to the North American Treaty Council. Well, the French are attempting always to justify the need for their own atomic independent of us, so I think they raised some difficulty about it. But I don't know what you think, as I say, what the United States has done for 17 years in Germany. I think that
there's one point that I do think we've got to remember. These people they were in an awful shape when Marshall Plan, of course, came back, and they recognized that. I'll tell you, the nation that speaks more publicly and openly about the help of American help is Germany. You never hear it this brought up in France, or sometimes in Britain, but up in Germany, it's almost religion. Everybody that comes to you says, well, now, of course, we realize that we owe to America. But the effort to get these people to doing their own part, I just don't know, on this very argument. If the six divisions there, and with a little bit that the 12 that Germany will have, and one with France, so on, you're bound to be back to the Rhine before you can collect yourself, you see? Unless you go into atomic business. And if that's going to be true, you've got to have greater strength that can be deployed rapidly. Well, if they're going to cut down, there's something wrong here. I don't know what it is. I hadn't heard this. I was hopeful. I knew that when de Gaulle brought back his Algerian army, he's done, but most of them say it is the army of France. But I never dreamed that he wouldn't go and fulfill his commitment.
Well, I agree. That's what I said to Alphonse. I said, this great Franco-German, we are always subject to very sharp criticism by the Germans for not doing one thing or another. And I said, well, we are doing everything we committed to under NATO, and addition carrying SAC, and addition the Navy, and addition Southeast Asia. I said, now France isn't even fulfilling its NATO commitment. But of course, the reason is they know that they don't depend on the French, and they depend on us, and therefore they are always concerned about our attention, because they realize that without the United States they would be exposed. The fact is that he would be perfectly right about talking about our immediate use of nuclear weapons, it seems to me, if we didn't have the Berlin problem, because then obviously any Soviet intrusion across the line would be a deliberate one, and would be the signal for war. When we have this problem maintaining our position in Berlin, where you may be using sort of gradually escalating force to maintain yourself in Berlin, you can't suddenly begin to drop nuclear weapons the first time you have a difficulty. That's really the only, and it's a very valid reason for our emphasis.
course, on that one, Mr. President, I personally, and I've always gone, felt this from the beginning. If they reel, there's no amount of strength you can put in Berlin they can save it. As a matter of fact, Kershaw said to me, Camp David, he was talking about needing some more troops. There's someone at that time, or a couple more divisions. So he says, what are they talking about? He says, for every division they can put in Germany, I can put 10 without any trouble whatsoever. And I said, we know that. And I said, but we're not worrying about that. And I said, no, I'll tell you, I don't propose to fight a conventional war. If you declare, if you bring on a war of global character, there's going to be no conventional, nothing conventional about it. And I told him flat. And he said, well, he said, that's the reason. He said, neither one of us can afford it. Yes, I said that. And I said, okay, that's, I agree with that, too. But you see, what these people are afraid, the essence of his argument was, if you try to fight this thing conventionally from the beginning, when do you start to go and look nuclear? And this will never be until you yourselves, in other words, become in danger. And he said, that means all Europe is again gone. And
but of course, we've got all these nuclear weapons, as you know, stored in West Berlin. All we are, what they're really concerned about is the Russians will seize Hamburg, which is only a few miles from the border, and some other town, and then they'll say we're going to negotiate. So then the Norstedt has come up with this forward strategy. I think the only difficulty is that no one will. That if we did not have the problem, as I say, of Berlin and maintaining access through that Autobahn Authority, then you would say that any attempt to seize any part of West Germany would go to nuclear weapons. Of course, they never will. But it's this difficulty of maintaining a position 120 miles behind their lines.
Mr. President, I'll tell you, here's something I can't document everything, but Clay was there where old Smith's gone. We begged our governments not to go into Berlin. I asked that they build a cantonment, a cantonment capital, at the junction of the British, American, and Russian zones. I said, we just don't, we can't do this. Well, it had been a political thing. It had been done first in the advisory council, European advisory council in London, and later confirmed. And that Mr. Roosevelt said to me this twice. I'm talking about my concern, and he said, he was always very, informal. He said, quit worrying about Uncle Joe. I'll take care of Uncle Joe. And that's exactly what he told once in Tunis and once when I came over here about the first year, second or third January of 44, last time I saw him. Now, he just wouldn't believe that these guys were the tough and really ruthless so-and-so they were. There's one other thing that Adenauer brought in, you might have interest more than I would under the security standpoint. He was talking about the French problem and about bringing the British into the common market, into the same nest. Now he said, just a few years when you were here, General, France wanted Britain in this whole. Association, in order to balance off Germany. Now, what they're frightened of is Britain comes in and Britain will have greater influence in the association than will France. Now, he said, this is, it's plenty of evidence there, but he said, one of the reasons they're making it so difficult for it to come into the common market. And he says, more or less, as a suspicion of his, that they were going to be able to prevent, because they would make it impossible, really, for Britain to come in, except at the price of complete desertion of Commonwealth. And the old boy said to me very, very wisely, he said, you know, today, if I were Prime Minister of Britain, I would not know what is the answer here. He says, for immediate economic advantage, they should come in the common market. But when you think of all the tradition and all of the connections they would have to sever, and the bad will that would be engendered throughout the country. He said, this is a tough problem for him.
He doesn't really want him in, he thinks, because it will weaken the
French British. I think he would like him in, but he doesn't think France wants him in. Because France, he said, France is finally getting the position they've been wanting to get some kind of a leader on all of Western Europe for their big shots.
Once the British come in, they'll...
That's right. They become sort of a foil.